Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, which will focus on the February meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. That meeting took place in London on the 7th and 8th of February 2019. My name is Matt Tilling. I'm a member of the technical staff here at the IASB. Today I am joined by the Vice Chair of the Board, Sue Lloyd, and Board Member Daryl Scott to talk through the latest meeting and other developments. So there was only a week between the end of the January board meeting and the beginning of the February one, but you managed to squeeze in a trustees meeting in Kuala Lumpur. Could you start by telling us about that?
Sure. So the trustees, which oversee the board, meet three times a year, and some board members, including Hans and myself and some technical and operational staff, attend each of the meetings, and we visit different jurisdictions around the world. This was a landmark meeting. Because it was the first meeting that Erkki Liikanen chaired. He's the new chair of the trustees, who took over in October last year. And in conjunction with the trustee meeting, we worked with the National Standards Setter in Malaysia, the MASB, to organise a stakeholder event while we were there, which was a great opportunity to meet a whole range of stakeholders from Malaysia and actually from the region as well. It was particularly a special event because the Minister of Finance was the guest of honour at the stakeholder event and gave a keynote speech.
Daryl, insurance was again a big part of the agenda for this month's board meeting. There were four papers for the board to discuss. Could you tell us about these?
Sure, Matt. Okay. So this was the fourth time that we've met as a board to discuss the amendments to IFRS 17. These amendments have arisen from a paper that was presented in October last year that highlighted implementation challenges and concerns that had been brought to our attention by constituents through the outreach processes we'd been doing. The first paper we discussed this month was about the scope of IFRS 17. Some companies issue loan contracts where the loan is forgiven if some uncertain future event occurs. A common example of this is a mortgage where the outstanding amount is waived on the death of the borrower. These contracts would be defined as insurance contracts and accounted for under IFRS 17 in terms of the way IFRS 17 is written at the moment. So in our discussion this month, we agreed that IFRS 9 would also provide good accounting for these products, and that it may be easier for companies to account for them in the same way they account for other similar products right now. So we tentatively decided to amend the scope of IFRS 17 for contracts where the only insurance is for the settlement of the obligation that is created by the contract itself. Companies issuing these contracts would now be allowed to choose to account for portfolios of contracts applying either IFRS 17 or IFRS 9 if this decision is confirmed. Just to pick up on a little bit of a misunderstanding that occurred just before we had the meeting, although we discussed loan-type products, we did not at this meeting discuss credit card products. The staff have indicated that they'll be bringing a paper to us in a future period to discuss those. The other three papers we discussed were about transition arrangements. A transition is about how companies move from an old IFRS standard to a new IFRS standard. And the starting point in IFRS is typically that a company restates all of the contracts on its books as though they had always been accounted for under the new standard. But a lack of robust historical data often makes this really hard. And so we typically allow or require some alternative to make changes easier and more verifiable. And what we were really discussing for most of the meeting was around how these make easier adjustments are actually put into place. The board discussed this at some length, but apart from some minor tweaks, we confirmed what is already in the standard. So we confirmed that we wouldn't make changes to the standard for these amended transition processes. But I think the discussion was really an extensive one and was quite a nuanced discussion that got into some really interesting details. So I think for anyone with a specific interest, I'd recommend listening to the insurance webcast on our website, or if you're really interested, perhaps reading the paper. And of course, if you're really, really interested, you've always got the opportunity to listen to the recording of the board meeting.
The board hasn't finished discussing IFRS 17, right? What happens next?
Okay, so that's correct. We have already worked through most of the topics we identified in October, but we do have a few to go. So we're likely to be discussing these amendments again at the March meeting and probably have some sort of sweep paper at the April meeting to pull everything together. We still expect to publish an exposure draft around the end of June this year.
Sue, the other big discussion this month was IBOR reform and the effects on financial reporting, which we have touched on in a previous podcast. This month, the board got down into some specifics.
That's right. And anybody who's interested in the sort of general background for this project should refer to the discussions that we had at our December board meeting. So at this month's meeting, we went on to discuss some specific proposals, and the board decided to propose making some amendments to the hedge accounting requirements, both in the new standard, IFRS 9, and the old financial instrument standard, IAS 39. And it's probably useful just to set the scene a little bit to talk about what the sort of objective is of these proposals that the board's agreed to expose for comment. And really the board's focus is on trying to help entities in this period of uncertainty where we don't exactly know what types of interest are going to replace IBOR-based amounts and contracts based on IBOR reform. And really overall, our objective is to prevent those who had good, effective hedges in place from being forced to discontinue hedge accounting simply as a result of the uncertainty about what those future cash flows might be that will replace IBOR-based cash flows. And that's because I think we're all sort of hoping that ultimately the cash flows will be such that there'll be good hedge accounting relationships again, and we've got this interim period that we need to deal with. So what were we looking at? We haven't changed the fundamentals of hedge accounting and what's proposed. So essentially all hedge accounting relies on a very high level of certainty that on a prospective basis there'll be a strong economic link and an economic offset between the item that's being hedged and the derivatives that's being used to hedge the item. And the board basically agreed that we should propose amendments that would prevent uncertainty about the replacement of IBOR-based amounts in itself causing the hedge accounting requirements to be breached. And the idea is that we'd put in place an amendment that would have a temporary life, if you like, and that it would be a form of relief that would be available until either when the replacement of IBOR means there's clarity on the new hedging relationship, or the hedging instrument or the hedging relationship comes to an end for another reason. The staff have indicated they're going to bring a couple of sweep issues, including on what does it mean when there's enough certainty about what the new hedging relationship looks like. We also are going to propose in the ED that we publish that companies provide specific disclosures about the extent to which they've used this relief that we've been discussing and when they apply the proposed amendment. Now, this is really phase one of our work on IBOR. We've already said that there will be a second phase of the project where we'll consider whether any other amendments are needed to IFRS 9 in particular, once there's certainty about what the new IBOR-based cash flows look like after the IBOR reform has been put in place. And that will encompass thinking about whether there's any other changes we need to make to hedge accounting, but it's also potentially more comprehensive. So looking, for example, at what the consequences would be for modifications of contractual cash flows, where you change the cash flows on an instrument, whether it needs to be derecognised or what the accounting for that would be. So lots to look forward to on the IBOR front.
Daryl, turning to a topic close to my heart, the board started working on the 2019 Comprehensive Review of the IFRS for SMEs standard.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased that we've now launched the 2019 review of the standard. It's been 7 years since the first comprehensive review, which started in 2012, and 2 years since that first comprehensive review became effective. Now, that seems like a long time, but that's supportive of the ISB's view that the IFRS for SMEs needs a stable platform, because these are smaller companies. For those of you not familiar with the IFRS for SMEs standard, it's our set of standard that is aimed at companies that are not publicly accountable. And so it's a standard that can't be used by listed companies and can't be used by banks and other companies that are publicly accountable. But that target group allows us to keep the standard shorter and a lot simpler. It's only about 250 pages long, and that's completely self-contained. So everything you need is in that back. So at this meeting, we agreed on a timeline that is, as its first milestone, the release of a request for information in the second half of 2019. In that request, we'll be calling for stakeholders to tell us about their experience with the standard, and we'll be asking them whether we should include any of the recent changes that have been made to full IFRS. The responses to the request for review will help the board identify the changes we could consider to the standard. That feedback will help us in developing an exposure draft of amendments to the IFRS for SMEs. In the next couple of months, the boards will discuss the questions we want to include in the request for information. And I'm looking forward to the discussion we have around the board table on the topic.
Sue, the board discussed a number of topics related to primary financial statements as well this month. Can you give us a quick overview of this discussion?
Yes, it was quite a detailed discussion this month on the topic, and I think we all felt quite positive that we'd move things forward quite a way in the discussion. Most of the discussion was about two particular types of companies. So type A, if you like, that are companies that provide financing to customers as a main business activity, and type B, those that, as part of their main business, invest in assets that generate a return individually and largely independently of other resources held by the company. So type A, for example, might include banks, insurance companies, conglomerates that have financing arms. And type B might be something like an investment property company. So what do we look at? First, we talked about the statement of financial performance, and the board looked at how each of these types of entities should classify income and expenses in their statement of financial performance. And in particular, we were looking at the treatment of financing expenses like interest expense, and whether those amounts should be included in whole or in part in the new operating profit metric in the income statement, or whether they should be included in the new financing part of the income statement. We then had a discussion about the cash flow statement, where we're making more targeted changes than we are on the income statement front. Again, looking at these type A and type B companies and whether they should classify particular cash flows in the cash flow statement. Again, the discussion was largely about the treatment of, or the presentation and location of, amounts related to interest expense for these type A and type B companies. There's a lot of specifics. I think it's quite an interesting topic, and there's a lot of detail in the board paper. So those who are interested, I recommend you go and have a look at that and update for the detailed decisions. For companies more generally, we also had a discussion about the cash flow statement and decided that all companies should be required to classify cash flows from dividends paid as financing cash flows, and that cash flows from dividends received on associates and joint ventures that are accounted for using the equity method should always be treated as investing cash flows. And those two last decisions are really responding to investor feedback, where they've said having less optionality about the location of items in the cash flow statement would make it easier for users of financial statements. So I think overall an interesting discussion.
Well, Sue, is there anything else that happened at the February board meeting?
Well, one other interesting session we had was a brief session where the staff gave us an oral update about the discussions of the Management Commentary Practice Statement Advisory Group. In January, there was a meeting of that consultative group that we set up last autumn. This is a group that's providing input on the Management Commentary project, and the staff gave us a very detailed update on the discussions and the work so far. I think all very positive and helpful feedback, and I think we're going to be putting a written summary of that feedback on the website shortly.
Well, thank you, Sue, and thank you, Daryl, and thank you to our listeners. Any feedback on these podcasts, please email communications@ifrs.org. The full summary of the board's discussion and the decisions at the February meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's website. You can also subscribe to receive new episodes as they become available on iTunes. We look forward to talking with you all again very soon.